Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
You're listening to the best of Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Continuing our conversation on the election, so much discussed, especially where the pro-life issues are concerned, because we are your pro-life radio and TV network. Chelsea Heumann is with us. She's a National Legislative Advisor for Heumann Coalition. Thank you for joining us. And let's talk a little bit. First of all, okay, so we see the results, and some are still coming in, waiting to see what the House is doing. But Donald Trump blew through all the swing states, and folks were very concerned about the economy, and of course, Catholics and other Christians concerned about the life issues. And even though the situation is far from perfect under a Trump administration come January, the second time around, it'll at least be better than it would be under Harris. So what are you looking forward to, Chelsea, in terms of what we're seeing right now for the pro-life future? And good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I think that we are really hopeful at Heumann Coalition for an administration change for several reasons. We know in the year after Roe was overturned that abortions were the highest that they've been in 12 years. 1.2 million women received abortions, and 1.2 million children were aborted. And those numbers are increasing thanks to the abortion drugs, which the FDA under the Biden administration, you know, worked to perpetuate across all 50 states, regardless of their legal landscape. So we're really hopeful that the next administration will be looking towards doing two things. One, protecting women, helping them get life-saving resources that they need in their moment of need. But two, also potentially looking to start protecting children in a stronger way than certainly the Biden administration did.
In terms of the biggest issues right now for pro-lifers, what are we looking at in terms of abortion limits and also transgender issues, which also falls under the life issues? What are your thoughts, Chelsea?
Yes, it's a full frontal assault. You know, we know over the last few years against children in the womb, the human person, human dignity. And I think we have a lot of work to do, number one, on the cultural front in our own homes. It starts with our own homes, the discussions around the dinner table, in our Bible studies and communities and serving those around us, frankly, our neighbors, who often women find themselves pregnant and don't know where to turn or how to get assistance, and so choose abortion in their view because of their circumstances. At Heumann Coalition, we have 76% of women we serve say they would rather parent if their circumstances were different. So that's where we start. You know, that's where our focus and priority is going to be. But secondarily, on the political front, we certainly have work to do in educating. We know that female voters did vote for President Trump, especially young voters in historic margins. We know that they were undeterred by the left's hard, extreme abortionism over the last year, being inundated with those narratives. They were rejected. The left was rejected on that front. But because the ballot initiatives, we lost seven of those, won three. We know that our work is ahead of us on the cultural front.
In terms of other issues that we're facing, and it's interesting because the Catholic vote went more toward Trump. We were just talking about that with Catholic vote there on just a few minutes ago. I'm thinking that Catholics now are going to be a new group, hopefully, to be reckoned with. I mean, are you recognizing that in terms of what you're seeing out there with the life issues and candidates?
Yes, and I think it's important because at the end of the day, what we're talking about is the very rights of humanity, which begin at conception. And, you know, the evangelical voting bloc is about 30% of all voters, and they can be single-issue voters on this, and we're really hopeful that this is something we can all unite around as believers. We are made in the image of God, created with a purpose, with dignity, and that's worth defending. The vulnerable humans in the womb should be our number one issue to vote with. I think we have some work to do on that front, but I think it's something that, you know, truth and science and medicine is on our side, and we can stand really firmly on that ground.
Now, I'm wondering your response to some of these really dramatic claims that under a Trump administration, women's so-called, you know, reproductive rights, obviously we're not for that because that just means abortion and birth control. But what I'm saying is there are these very, very dramatic claims out there. Women are going to die in the streets and under a Trump administration, and there's going to be a national abortion ban. And yet the truth of the matter is he said he would not push for a national abortion ban. If it passed it, he would veto it. He's for limits at the states. What other areas do you think the left has basically gone off the rails in terms of what they're claiming about the upcoming administration?
I think nearly every article I've seen about abortion has been inundated with fear-mongering. Every single article, not a lot of fact, not a lot of nuance or analysis of the law. One great example would be that every single woman in every single state is allowed to receive life-saving medical care, and have been, by the way, under Supreme Court precedents for 50 years. So some of those lies are things we are seeing seep in. And, you know, for us, the difficulty there is that women believe those lies, and women, you know, need to seek help sooner. And also we hope reach out to pregnancy resource centers and know that there's assistance available to them. We would like to see the next administration do things like defund Planned Parenthood, who receives $700 million from the federal government, even after we've got multiple Medicaid fraud cases against them now out of Texas and Louisiana. We've got, you know, the alleged fetal tissue cell cases still out there. So we'd like to see them defunded, and maybe a really unifying issue we hope President Trump would pay attention to is the fact that 80% of all voters support the work of pregnancy resource centers to help women. That could certainly be something he turns his attention to at the federal level, is just serving women and helping that infrastructure be strengthened.
Yeah, that would be really, really amazing to see the focus on pregnancy resource centers. I mean, I know that we've known for forever the great work that they do, but to really have a national focus on that, because the media mm-hmm. especially has not paid attention to the pregnancy resource centers. As a matter of fact, they've lied about the pregnancy resource centers and the great work that they do as well.
They do. And the truth is there's, you know, 2,700 pregnancy resource centers across our entire country doing good work for women, helping them get access to employment, helping them with their resume building and budgeting and saving affordable housing, affordable child care, with public and private resources. You know, truly neighbors being neighbors is the community building we're talking about. But it would certainly go a long way if, you know, President Trump and his new administration wanted to turn an eye towards protecting these women. What would it look like to create an environment where abortion felt like a last resort to her?
Yeah, yeah. What a concept, right? Well, what can we do, Chelsea? And by the way, we're talking with Chelsea Human, National Legislative Advisor for the Human Coalition Action. What can we do as pro-lifers, as concerned pro-lifers, to let the president-elect know that we want really a lot of emphasis on pregnancy resource centers? We're still very concerned about abortion, while there'll be fewer abortions in terms of his policies versus under a Harris campaign. There's still, as you said, a lot of work to be done. It's hardly perfect. What can we do to get our concerns out there, do you think?
I love that question. The number one thing is to make sure your elected officials hear from you. I hear it all the time as I lobby that they only hear from feminists and the pro-abortion crowd. So call your state senator, call your state representative, your federal ones, and of course, you know, get those emails out. But then the other thing you can do is look how to engage with your church in your community on this issue. Starting a Bible study at your church where we're discipling on the human dignity of that God has created in each one of us, but also serving with a pregnancy resource center. You can go to humancoalition.org and learn more about our work, of course.
Chelsea, thank you so much for all your work. Give us your website if people want more information.
Yes, it's humancoalition.org, and we work to serve women seeking abortion across the country.
Thank you for all that you do, and look forward to keeping in touch with you as we get closer to the inauguration and the new administration. Catholic Connection is sponsored by House of Joppa. House of Joppa's mission is to share the beauty of our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith in our homes through Catholic home decor, art, candles, statues, rosaries, and Catholic jewelry. They're gifts designed to help you live out your Catholic faith. For more information, go to houseofjoppa.com. That's House of Joppa, J-O-P-P-A.
More of Catholic Connection coming up on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com. This show is underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
My dear brothers and sisters, I'm Bishop Gerald Vinke of the Diocese of Salina in Kansas. This year, you can create a Christmas miracle for a child growing up in the extreme poverty of a developing country. By donating to Send a Box of Joy, you will surprise a child with what could be the first Christmas gift of his or her life. You can bless a child today by donating at boxofjoy.org.
Now, Catechism Wisdom with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and Father Larry Richards.
A culture that's materially comfortable gets spoiled. It says, I want my needs met. If I'm married, or even if I'm not, one of my needs, in my mind, might be, I want a child, and I want it now. For Catechism Wisdom, joining me, Father Larry Richards.
Yes.
Catechism says something here that's going to ruffle a
know.
Lot of folks.
Read me. Let me have it.
All right. Section 2378. A child is not something owed to one, but is a gift. The supreme gift of marriage is a human person. Wait a minute. We got the technology. Like, you know, the old bionic man. We've got the means. We can make it right.
Absolutely.
I want a kid. You know, my 10 children are all adopted.
Mm-hmm.
So the supreme gift of marriage, biologically, for me, was not a child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, am I getting ripped off?
Mm.
And is that fair?
The reality of all things is that we're all called to be life-giving, huh? But often God does not call that, like for me, he doesn't call me to be life-giving by having my own children, you know? God's called, but he still does it. And the same with a couple who can't have children. They can do everything that the church allows them to do, as long as they're doing it to saying, okay, I want God's will in my life. I'm not going to make God do something for me. I'm going to seek God's will. And if I work according to nature and I work according to the teaching of the church, if God decides to give me a child, absolutely, God bless. But if he doesn't, that doesn't mean I can't be fruitful. It can be like you have a go and adopt 10 children. Think about how many children in the world today have no one to care for them or love them. And so if you really, really, really want to be a mother or father, then do as you did.
It is always so exciting and fun and informative, educational, uplifting. The chat with the one, the only, Father Robert Spitzer. I love him with Doug Keck on EW10 and Father Spitzer's Universe. I just love talking with him and picking his extremely large brain. It's just amazing the amount of knowledge this amazing priest has. And now he has yet another wonderful book, this one from Ignatius, Christ, Science, and Reason, What We Can Know About Jesus, Mary, and Miracles. Father, how are you, my friend? Good to talk to you again.
I'm doing great, Teresa. Thanks again for letting me crank your ear inside out here. I really appreciate it.
Well, this is a beautiful book, and I think with all the emphasis right now, of course, on the Eucharistic revival and the need for Catholics to continue to embrace the Eucharist so deeply in our lives, what a great book. When you were putting this together, what were you thinking about in terms of catechesis or evangelization? What was on your heart, Father, first of all?
Well, there were three things really on my heart. The first is I wanted to reach a lot of younger people, you know, with an education, so younger professionals or young college people or seniors even, if I could get that that level of people. But the main thing I was interested in was letting them see that science and Jesus Christ, Mary, the Eucharist, are all compatible. because I think a lot of people operate under the assumption that somehow faith and science and, you know, they're really in a rift, and that, frankly, the anything having to do with Jesus has no scientific validation whatsoever. And a lot of people really do believe, you know, that the Eucharist, as you know from just looking at the recent polls, the Catholics really do have a lot of difficulty believing in the Eucharist, especially in that younger population. So I thought, what I would like to do is get it all under one cover. Mm-hmm. There's been so much scientific investigation, very credible, convincing scientific investigation on the Shroud of Turin. I wanted to get that in there. And by the way, I just looked at two more articles today, or yesterday, that were just fantastic in terms of the carbon dating on the shroud, but that's beside the point. And then I saw all the new evidence on the Eucharistic miracles, the scientific, and then, you know, so much has been done on the Tilma of Guadalupe, and I wanted to kind of revitalize the miracle of the sun at Fatima, because it's such a remarkable miracle, and it's kind of gone out of fashion, or it's faded away, but the number of young people, young adults, and also college students that I talked to simply had no idea about any of this. And I just thought, wow, the Lord has left us with all of this fantastic evidence. And there's, you know, barely a peep. I mean, yes, the National Catholic Register covers articles on the Shroud and Eucharistic miracles and other publications do, but a lot of our younger people, you know, don't quite get to that. So I thought, I'm going to put this under one cover. I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to go on the speaking circuit, and I'm going to start making this known. And I'm telling you, when young people find out about this, because they're the ones that really need the science, but also I'm getting, you know, like middle-aged groups, you know, good Catholic strong groups. I was just in Des Moines. Yesterday I was in Lincoln. I mean, talking about this with the teachers. I think people are utterly amazed. They have no idea how credible, how very deep the scientific evidence is. So that was my main purpose. And the tangential areas, of course, are that I would be able to strengthen devotion to the Eucharist, strengthen devotion to Mary, and, of course, always, you know, to keep that sense up of the unity of all of these things, you know, Jesus, the Holy Eucharist, Mary, you know, in our Catholic Church, you know, the Catholic Church would kind of gain in credibility. I mean, we're so open to science, and not only are we open to science, but God has provided us with this evidence that makes the 2,000-year-old preaching on the Holy Eucharist and on Mary not only credible, it makes it look incredible. So I thought, well, this is the time to put it out. I had all the notes together. Lots of new stuff there that I tried to get into the book, and that's what you get when you read Christ, Science, and Reason.
Oh, I have so many questions. The book is Christ, Science, and Reason, What We Can Know About Jesus, Mary, and Miracles by our friend, Father Robert Spitzer. Father, first of all, you wonder, and a lot of people ask me this question, and I wonder your perspective on this. With all that we have in the church that proves the existence of these miracles that have happened, the Eucharistic miracles, when we know we can go to Orvieto, we know we can go to Lanciano, we know we can go other places of even more recent Eucharistic miracles, as you mentioned, you kind of wonder why the church doesn't have a big sign outside of the cathedral in Orvieto, come here, like a big flashing light or one of those spotlights, those huge spotlights, come here, a great miracle, come see it. You know, you want the church to promote this more. And some people ask me that, why don't we hear more about it from the church? But is it more of a sense of the church saying, and as Jesus did to us, come and see in a more subtle way?
I think it is. I think, you know, the church is, you know, people within the church, like myself, can really do apologetics. The church, as an institution, as a magisterium, has to be very, very careful because, you know, they want to be close to 100% sure about anything that they would give approval to. So, you know, even the slowness and the approval of, you know, Medjugorje for a while there, I mean, it's just normal to take your time. Time is the acid. It will bring out everything under the sun that needs to come out. Scientific investigation oftentimes takes time. And, you know, in many respects, you need an accumulation of evidence in science, a preponderance of evidence is what it's called, where you mm-hmm. take several different facts, you put them together, and then you get to a point where you really have what's called a probative base, where you can say, you know, it's very credible, it's reasonable and responsible on the basis of science to believe that this is an authentic miracle. Like, I think, right now, with the new carbon dating evidence that was released with respect to the shroud, the new fluorescing evidence that was done by McAvoy and his colleagues put together with the stuff that Robert Rucker has done, it's just getting to the point where, I mean, you're getting exact mathematical matches between neutron density in the shroud mm-hmm. and the carbon dating and the fluorescing. It's hard to deny. I'd say right now that is reasonable and responsible to believe the Shroud of Turin is not only the burial cloth of Jesus Christ with a portrayal of his crucifixion in a very anatomically detailed way, and just brings it out, but it gives evidence of his resurrection, and mm-hmm. that the evidence is with what we call the particle radiation hypothesis, where you've got these two flows of particles that are taking place and giving rise not only to the image, but strengthening the cloth and, you know, brightening the blood stains on it, and a variety of other things that, you know, enigmas we used to call them previously. And now you can see this writ large in the good scientific evidence. So I thought, let's put all of this out there so people can see it's reasonable and responsible. Is it the church's place to say that? I think it could be. You know, the church can say, well, it's reasonable and responsible. We don't have perfect certitude. You're going to have a hard time getting perfect certitude in science. So mm-hmm. that's just the problem. But so I think that's why they're conservative. And I also think it is a quieter pedagogy, but I'm a loudmouth pedagogy. So I do it.
Me too, Father. Right on.
We need a little of that in this age where we're competing with a lot of secular loudmouths.
We're talking with Father Robert Spitzer. We're glad that he's a Catholic loudmouth. He is a PhD, president of the Magis Center of Reason and Faith and the Spitzer Center. He was a president of Gonzaga University from 1998 to 2009. As you know, the author of many books, including Healing the Culture, Finding True Happiness, Five Pillars of the Spiritual Life, The Light Shines On in the Darkness, A Soul's Upward Yearning. Love that one. I love them all, but I love that one in particular. And God So Loved the World. You also know him from his great work here on EWTN on Father Spitzer's Universe, hosted by my friend Doug Keck. The book we're talking about this morning is Christ, Science, and Reason, What We Can Know About Jesus, Mary, and Miracles. Father, I think, and we've talked about this before, and we're probably going to be butting into a break, so if we hear the music, we'll have to sit down with the musical chairs and continue it after the break. But I think one of the best ways to point to the evidence of God, even if people aren't ready to look at Eucharistic miracles or the saints or the Blessed Mother, is to look what happens when we go against natural law. And you've talked a lot about this in your books. Because when you start, you and I are old enough to remember that commercial, Don't Fool with Mother Nature, when Mother Nature snaps her fingers and the thunderstorm happens and everything else. It's so evident, for example, if you look at what's happening, whether it's abortion, the fallout from that, abortion from an over-sexualized culture, when God gives us guidance in terms of you're not supposed to be jumping from bed to bed or doing this, that, or the other thing. It's not because he loves us. It's not a no, as Pope Benedict said. It's a yes to love and life. If we just look at the fallout from going against the natural law, to me that is great evidence. But we have everything else that you're talking about in this new book as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wrote a book called The Moral Wisdom of the Catholic Church simply mm-hmm. to present that evidence. I think it's overwhelming. When you start going against the church's objective moral teaching, when you start, you know, undermining belief in God and the church itself, you can actually correlate that with good secular statistics that it will increase depression, anxiety, substance mm-hmm. abuse, familial tensions, antisocial aggressivity, and not to mention suicidality and suicide. The American Psychiatric Association was the one who made these determinations, and I used just like maybe 150 or so, 160 or so different secular studies in the moral wisdom of the Catholic Church to prove this is exactly what happened on all the major issues, like transgenderism, yep. a 20 times increase in suicides and a 3 times increase in mortality rates, etc.
But then there's so much more that the Lord gives us, and that's what we're talking about this morning with Father Spitzer. In his latest book, he details this, Christ, Science, and Reason, published by Ignatius Press, What We Can Know About Jesus, Mary, and Miracles. We'll be right back. More with Father Spitzer coming up.
Sixty on 10 with Monsignor Charles Pope.
The first commandment, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me. In this commandment, God seeks to protect us from false claims to our worship and obedience. And there's a great sad history of people who have trusted in gods other than him or things other than him and the ruin that it has caused. So God is trying to protect us and call us to an absolute trust and obedience of him. He asks us to trust him above all things and above all other people or so-called gods. We have to also avoid things like consulting horoscopes, palm reading, clairvoyance, recourse to mediums, any desire to try to control things apart from God. God simply says, trust me, I'm the Lord your God. The first commandment, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no strange gods before me.
For more about the Ten Commandments, visit EWTNRC.com.
Sin creates a proclivity to sin, the Catholic Catechism teaches. It develops vice by repetition of the same wrong act. Thus, sin tends to reinforce and reproduce itself. Vice can be linked to the capital sins, which are called capital because they can engender other sins and other vices. The capital sins are pride, avarice, envy, wrath, lust, gluttony, and sloth. Sin is a personal act, but we can also be responsible for the sins of others under certain conditions. Sin can make men accomplices of one another, the Catechism warns, causing concupiscence, violence, and injustice to reign among them. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
So grateful for Father Spitzer spending some extra time with us this morning on his new book, Christ, Science, and Reason, published by Ignatius Press, What We Can Know About Jesus, Mary, and Miracles. I want to talk about the Eucharist. And you're saying, and you said during the introduction, Father, of the book in the first segment, that there are 3 recent scientifically investigated Eucharistic miracles. It really is incredible. Jesus everywhere around the world is saying, come and see. So tell us what you include in the book on the recent miracles.
Yeah, as you said, Teresa, there are many excellent Eucharistic miracles around the country. I picked these 3 because the scientific investigation of them had been done so thoroughly. The first one is the Buenos Aires miracle, 1996. It was overseen by Archbishop Bergoglio, now Pope Francis, and the primary investigator was Dr. Ricardo Castañón Gómez, but later on he was accompanied by Dr. Frederick Zugabe, the very famous histopathologist up there in Columbia, New York University, who followed on, especially looking at the tissue itself and found it to be living heart tissue, which I'll explain in a moment. The second miracle is that the 2006 a miracle that was in Tixla, Mexico, where there was some soft, spongy tissue sort of in the middle of the host that was emitting blood, and the blood was sort of trickling along the surface there, and it was layering according to, you know, the newest blood was on the bottom of the trickle, and the older blood was sort of layered above it with different amounts of coagulation, so you could tell the actual age of the blood. But anyway, this again, we find that there are white blood cells and macrophages, leukocytes, which normally die within a few hours, the tissue being disconnected from an embodied circulatory system. But in this particular case, what we see is they are living and working, phagocytizing lipids, which is basically, you know, these fat cells, the leukocytes are performing healing activities. So that means wow. that the tissue growing out of the host has to be living heart tissue, and it is heart tissue. And then you add to that the miracle of Sokolka, Poland, in 2008. Now, this miracle is also, it's spectacular, because what two of the medical examiners had done, Dr. Elisabetta Lutkowska and Dr. Stanislav Sokowski. Sokowski, by the way, has a publishing profile that's unbelievable. And anyway, very, very credible man. Doctor, anyway, they did a electron microscopic analysis of it. And with electron microscopy, you can get right down to the fine detail. And they found that the tissue of the host, right, which is basically got the molecular construction of Brad, and the tissue of and the living heart tissue, the substance of the living heart tissue, they are connected on the level of the thin filaments of the myofiber. Now, that's just with a few microns of separation. So you have this complex interweaving of two vastly different substances, right? Brad molecules that are not living combined with living heart tissue, and they're woven together as if one is growing out of the other, as if they were inherently connected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. You can't even commit a fraud. There is no technology in the world, none whatsoever, that will enable you to do the complex interweaving of those two hosts, of those two substances, like we find in the Sokolka host. There's a brand new book that doesn't look so much at the microscopy, dealing with the interconnection of the host, but the cardiological examination of it is stupendous. This is Franco Serafini. He published a book, just came out on Sophia about 2 years ago or so, or a year and a half ago or so. But it's called A Cardiologist Examines Jesus. But it is, make no mistake about that, that it really gives you good medical anatomical evidence for all my book as well. So I would say that that's another resource if you're looking more for the anatomy part. But I try to give you the wide, the breadth, really, of the evidence from right. the microscopy and histopathology, et cetera.
It's so fascinating, and it is it's hard to wrap our minds around it, because, for example, I've been to, had the privilege of being doing pilgrimages to Lanciano quite often, and Orvieto, uh-huh. of course, the corporal of Orvieto. And in Lanciano, I imagine it would be similar to what you just mentioned, because Lanciano was amazing, considering how old that Eucharistic miracle is, and the experts that did the studies on the blood and on the basically the heart muscle, which is what it was in Lanciano, and how it shows that this is from someone who was suffering, and that it's alive. It's just, you can't, it's hard to wrap your mind around it, though, Father. That's what's so incredible about this.
Yeah, with the Lanciano miracle, Dr. Linoli, way back in the 90s, and the 80s and 90s, did some remarkable studies of this miracle. And as you're right, Teresa, it's 1,300 years old. I mean, we're literally dealing with a miracle that happened in the 800s with a monk. And to be able to actually, you know, look, examine the tissue that is growing out of that host, and to actually see that it is cardiac tissue, that 1,300 years old, you know, Autolycus should have wiped this out by now. But wow, there it is, and it's still identifiable as heart tissue, and the AB blood type, and a variety of other really important similarities in the histopathology. It is something to see, and I would definitely, if you have a chance to go to Lancia, well, I know you go and take the tours all the time, but I mean, your listeners have a chance to do that. It's well worth looking at. I think it, you know, when you have something that's that old, you know, it's a little bit harder to get the certainty that you can with Buenos Aires and with Tixla and Sokolka. However, at the same moment, there are so many similarities between Lanciano and the other three more contemporary ones that happened in 1996, 2006, and 2008, respectively, that I just have to think Lanciano is right on the mark. And like I said, Dr. Lanoli really did an excellent job with as old as that tissue was, how careful you have to be, you know, with something that is 1,300 years old, and what a great job he did. I think
it's phenomenal. Volumes. It's incredible. I'm so glad you did this book. And we come back, I want to talk about our Mama Mary and the miracles, especially with Fatima, because, of course, talking about that during October. Christ, Science, and Reason, What We Can Know About Jesus, Mary, and Miracles from our own Father Robert Spitzer. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Wrapping up with Father, a special edition of Catholic Connection.
She was a mystic and reformer who died at the age of 33.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Catherine of Siena accomplished something no one thought possible. She convinced Pope Gregory XI to return to Rome after the popes had lived in France for almost the whole of the 14th century. They've been there ever since.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament, with the goal of an hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read Scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith. They would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master. And the Master is Jesus.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Time flies and you have amazing guests like our very own Father Robert Spitzer. You know him from his great work here at EWTN, but also he's the president of the Magis Center of Reason and Faith in the Spitzer Center, and he is the author of many, many books, including this beautiful book that is recently published by our friends at Ignatius, Christ, Science, and Reason, What We Can Know About Jesus, Mary, and Miracles. Okay, we talked about the Eucharistic miracles. in two segments. I'm going to talk about Mama Mary. And what I love about these messages that come through the miracles, where Jesus is reminding us of his Sacred Heart through the Eucharist because of the heart-muscle connection and the blood connection and what we know about these miracles, as you testified so eloquently, Father, in the last two segments and also in this book. But the same messages keep coming from the Blessed Mother. Like a good mom, she keeps saying, she points to her son. She's talking about the rosary. She's talking about going to Mass, going to confession. And this is consistent throughout the various apparitions. And there are some pretty powerful things that happen with these apparitions. And we're talking about approved apparitions, of course, with the Church, which, as you mentioned earlier, does take time. But you talk a lot in this book about Fatima. So let's talk about the miracle of the sun, because it's pretty hard to deny when you have so many people that saw it happen.
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, at the very minimum, there were 30,000 people witnessing it. But those estimates go up to 70,000. So I just pick, you know, kind of a number in between. Obviously, the 30,000 was what the Masonic paper said, and, you know, the Masons in Portugal were during World War One, were not the friendliest to the Catholic Church by any stretch of the imagination. And so to have them even admit, well, yeah, there were about 30,000 people. This is the editor of the major Masonic paper. You have to admit at that juncture, wow, that's going to be a large number. So let's just say 50,000 people are there. There are scientists there. There are lawyers there. There are people who are, you know, professional journalists. There are people who are involved, needless to say, in the Portuguese legal system, who would have very much liked to have had that denied. But not a single person has come forward to say, gosh, I was there and nothing like that happened. So first of all, it's a very well-founded miracle. The miracle of the sun took place, actually we were celebrating October 13th, a couple of days ago. But in any case, happened was that Lucy, for 3 months, she's the primary protagonist. She's obviously had heard from the Blessed Virgin Mary, okay, that October 13th, 1917, there's going to be this wonderful miracle that's going to happen. She doesn't say miracle of the sun, but she says it'll be a miracle which everybody will see. So come, you know, to Fatima, come to the COVID area, and you will see it. It'll be right when the sun is at its high point, would be noon, basically. But in Portugal, the sun was at its high point at 2 o'clock, because the Portuguese had moved their clocks forward 2 hours to sympathize with their troops who were fighting in France during World War One. So anyway, she predicts this on three separate occasions. Then sure enough, everybody's gathered, right? You have 50,000 people there, and she comes out. She's riding on the shoulders of this a man, and she comes out, and it's been raining all night. That's important. And the people's clothes are soaked, the ground is soaked, and then she points and says, "Look at the sun." And sure enough, the sun, now believe me, if you have 50,000 people looking at the sun, this is going to cause retinal problems in a normal, naturalistic world. So all 50,000 of these people are looking at this miracle that's going to take place over 10 minutes. The sun starts spinning on its own axis. And then as it starts spinning, it's just shooting out rays of individual colors. So and as the sun turns, each of these different colors is beginning to sort of, blanch over. It's, they kind of dye everybody on the ground, not really dye them, but, they keep changing colors from blue to yellow to orange to red. It's, not just on the people, it's on the ground, it's everywhere. The sun is shooting out these very colorful, individuated colors as it's spinning on its own axis. Then what happens is it detaches from, its place in the sky there, and it goes, literally, catapulting practically toward the earth. And people all, you know, as almost one human being, they all come down on their knees. They're looking up there. They're confessing their sins, literally, you know, asking for repentance. They thought the world was ending. As the sun approached the earth, it began to dry the clothes of the people and the ground and so forth. And then suddenly it stops and goes right back into the sky again, turns a few more times on its own axis, and stops. Now, of course, the first thing you do, and the people who are astronomically and astrophysically oriented, they basically called every observatory or, you know, they could nearby and around the world, and all the observatories said, well, no, nothing happened with the sun. There was nothing extraordinary. But at the COVA, certainly something did happen, right? I mean, you know, it was very, very clear. And when you have, you know, 50,000 people just down on the ground screaming out, et cetera, and then even people 30 miles away who see it, you have to have some kind of an explanation. And the explanation is the sun itself didn't move, but there was something like a lens, a huge lens, I'm just going to say maybe about a half a mile in diameter, situated several miles above the cova, and it's taking the it's taking the sunlight, refracting it toward the earth, and it's this huge lens is coloring the sunlight. It's refracting it in various different ways. The sun is kind of dancing up there in the sky before it, you know, detaches and sort of comes hurling toward the earth, and so and dries the ground, obviously having a physical effect there. Couldn't be mass hysteria because people who are anywhere from 10 to 30 miles away are still seeing the phenomena. So, you know, what could have done it? Well, I think it is a huge lens, about a half a mile in diameter, located several miles above the cova, but sufficiently far away that people distant from the cova could still see it with great clarity. There is a very fine priest physicist, Dr. Stanley Yaki, very well known for his work in the metaphysics of contemporary science. In any case, Dr. Yaki wrote a book called God and the Sun at Fatima. He gave one of his explanations, which was a that he thought that maybe there was an air lens about a half a mile in diameter that was reconstituted by a whole series of very strange events that would normally not happen. But if that explanation is true, and there were these this convergence of about 10 naturalistically very, very unusual phenomena that came together at the exact time that Lucy predicted on October 13, 1917, when the sun was at its high point in the sky, which in Portugal was at 2 o'clock, right? If, to have that happen at the exact time predicted, the odds of that happening are about a trillion, 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 trillion to one. So if it did happen, why, that was a miracle. So let's face that fact. My view is, you know, if God's going to go through all that trouble to do that, he may as well just create a supernatural lens that's a half a mile in diameter and produce the same effect. But you can get a naturalistic explanation from Father Dr. Yaki there, or you can get the supernatural explanation. Either one of them, it's a miracle. And it's a miracle of cosmic proportions. I mean, this is truly, as I said, you're not going to have more witnesses than this. That's the first thing. The second thing is it's been very well scientifically investigated, both God and the sun at Fatima. But the point is that Mary wanted to make her message really well known. She wanted to tell people hell is a reality. And you have to watch out for your formidable enemy, who is Satan. And he is working through the secular culture, something in very subtle ways sometimes and in very explicit ways, at other times. And that message, you know, just needed to get across. But also, Fatima is a great miracle of hope. There is Mary. There's her gentle figure. And she's saying, have faith in me. Come back to my son, Jesus, and you will find the path of salvation. You will have protection from hell and this formidable enemy who's here just in this horrible, you can't believe in 1917, right? Horrible war that was going on in World War One. I mean, the catastrophic death of, you know, tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, you know, just on the battlefront, et cetera. The disease that was going to spring forth out of this horrible war, you know, the Spanish flu that killed, you know, nearly a quarter of the population. It's unimaginable, you know, today, but it was happening. But there was Fatima, and there was hope, and there was, you know, a real cosmological, I mean, a cosmic proof, you know, that God is here, God is present, the supernatural happens. It happens when the Blessed Virgin Mary says it's going to happen. She's the instrument through which it happens. She's our consolation. She's helping in the whole economy of salvation. She's the one that really is, you know, involved in so many of the aspects of our life with, yes, pointing to her son. It is Jesus' power. It is God's power that she is conduiting, as it were, through her gentle voice and her gentle way and her gentle motherly message. And so I love this miracle because there it is. She, with all of her gentleness, and if you look at Mary's, you know, the very, you know, almost vulnerable figure in the New Testament, and how the Lord is just looking out after her through Joseph and through all the circumstances, miraculous, many of them in her life. You start looking at this and you go, there she is, this little figure when she was on this earth, and now this gigantic figure, as it were, in charge of this huge atmospheric phenomenon at Fatima that really shows her cosmic, you know, proportions. And she is with you. She is your mother. You can trust in her. And if you want some really, really good evidence of it, read about, well, you can read my book, Christ, Science, and Reason, and this is all in chapters 5 and 6. Lourdes is chapter 6, but 5 is Fatima. Yeah, just take a look at that. I think there's a good summary of a very convicting kind of evidence that really does show her loving, gentle, motherly presence.
Yeah, it reminds me of the last words we hear speaking in Scripture, do whatever he tells you, and there's a reason for that, right? Christ, Science, and Reason, what we can know about Jesus, Mary, and miracles from our friend, the one, the only, Father Robert Spitzer. Thanks so much, Father. We'll be right back on Catholic Connection. Stay tuned. Catholic Connection is sponsored by House of Joppa. House of Joppa's mission is to share the beauty of our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith in our homes through Catholic home decor, art, candles, statues, rosaries, and Catholic jewelry. They're gifts designed to help you live out your Catholic faith. For more information, go to houseofjoppa.com. That's houseofjoppa, J-O-P-P-A.com.
More of Catholic Connection coming up on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
This show is underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
My dear brothers and sisters, I'm Bishop Gerald Vinke of the Diocese of Salina in Kansas. This year, you can create a Christmas miracle for a child growing up in the extreme poverty of a developing country. By donating to Send a Box of Joy, you will surprise a child with what could be the first Christmas gift of his or her life. You can bless a child today by donating at boxofjoy.org.
I hope you know how much we appreciate your listenership here at the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network, as well as the Ave Maria Radio Network. And we always say we are all about the resources. So just remember, anything you hear daily on this show, you can check out. You can go to, for example, the EWTN Religious Catalog through EWTN.com. You may also go to the archive section of Catholic Connection at AveMariaRadio.net. And all the resources are there for you. This is also a great way, by the way, to witness. Sometimes if you're challenged by a friend or a loved one on a particular topic and you hear us talking about an issue, right, that has come up, especially, right, over the holidays or a special occasion, you can go to or tell your friend or family member with whom you're discussing something to go to one of these sites and to listen to a program, or you can send them to the link to the program and they could hear it for themselves. That's why we call Catholic Radio part of being a member of the Shy Evangelist family, right? Because we do the evangelization for you and you can pass it on. We'll talk to you in the next edition of Catholic Connection. Thanks again for listening.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.